Great to have you along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here talking personal computers and software today with Peter Green of InfoStar, Madison, our personal computer consultant. Great to have Pete with us today. And certainly if you have a question, call us at 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. We'd love to hear from you. And Peter, welcome back.
Always great, Larry.
We've got, you've had some issues in your own.
Lots of stuff going on.
Lots of things going on.
And I could be very opinionated, too.
Well, what about, go ahead.
Just some things real quick. This morning, listening to news and Jobs being, a little angry with Google and Adobe and, the release of the iPad and, it's just interesting how one company gets angry and remarks about others, and then they don't take a good look at some of the things that they've been doing. So I just find it humorous, and they should just, both work on improving the products that they have and make them work better, along with Windows. Just some history. I looked this up. XP, Windows XP, was released in August to the retail market in October of 2001. And by January of 2006, there were over 400 million copies of that.
Huh.
So, if you know the value of what that is and the licensing, you can understand why, Bill Gates, one of the wealthiest persons on the planet. By December of 2009, so this is, basically a month ago, XP had 61.6% of the operating system market share, and it had peaked in January of 2007 at 76.1. So the transition is going on in terms of people upgrading. So they were upgrading to Vista, and that was, in my opinion, a product that was prematurely released. Windows 7 basically fixed what was wrong with Vista. In terms of what they're charging for the product, in my opinion,
what are they charging?
They've got some pretty good pricing on it. I think some of the versions are, well, Larry, how many versions are there of Windows, of Vista and version and Windows 7 and Apple? So Microsoft could take a lesson from Apple and say, we really only need one version of the operating system. So there's probably like five versions out there. So to answer one of your questions that, and we get, mm-hmm. you and Jim prepare mm-hmm. for me, is that, in upgrading from Vista to Windows 7, in most cases you can do or download what's called a Windows 7 compatibility test. You could do that with any operating system. So when you upgraded XP, they had one. When you upgraded Vista, they had one. When you upgraded to 7, they have a test. Basically, is it perfect? No. I've had friends that have done it, and some of the products didn't work, and they were frustrated with the support and actually said, I use my computer for doing this, and it worked better on Vista, so I want to go back. I've heard that, one or two instances, but, in terms of performance, Windows 7 is an improvement. It's more stable. It's more robust. It does things that I would have wanted it to do when it was Vista, mm-hmm. but now it's doing it with Windows 7, so it's an enjoyable product to actually use and experience. As far as compatibility, this is where I have a problem with how Microsoft licenses different versions, where the XP compatibility, we just talked about the numbers out there and right. how prevalent, how popular it is. In terms of XP compatibility, you would need the Windows 7 Professional version, the Enterprise Edition, or Windows Ultimate, which are the more expensive versions of the product, to, I wouldn't say guarantee, but, close to guarantee you some kind of Windows XP compatibility mode where you could use your older software products. And I object to that. I think that should have been across the board and in one product. But, of course, they have all their different versions. So You know, that's what I have to say about that. Then in terms of, you know, what's going on with Google and China and so forth, my daughter's Gmail account actually was compromised, and trying to understand how. And it was at that time where the things happened with the overseas country, and we don't want to name names. Mm-hmm. But her account was compromised. And what I caution people is that you have to understand that when you're connecting to the cloud, which is the internet, and it's a network mm-hmm. of computers, and it's not there, it's never off, it's always on. And Google has not one server, they've got thousands of servers serving us. Microsoft with a Hotmail, Yahoo with their email, their web-based accounts. If you leave sensitive material on them and they are compromised, you have given them everything. So you can't archive web-based email, because if there is an outside chance that it gets compromised and you're relying on somebody else's security, not just your own, and it gets compromised, you're susceptible to whatever has been left up there. So just word of caution, you know, if you're going to start archiving your email up there and someone gains access to it, you know, you can lose, if you're active on Facebook, you can lose your Facebook account, because if you leave access to that or your bank information up there and so forth. So I'd be real careful with that. And then, you know, as far as the iPad coming out, it, neat little device, there are other companies that make it. There's been touchscreen technology, has been out there for, you know, 15, 20 years that I've worked with. Is it perfect? No. Is it neat? Yeah. Is it for everybody? No. But, you know, it's another market of a computer device, and it's going to expand our horizons. As far as its effect on a market like e-books, could be interesting. I mean, Amazon yeah. makes the Kindle. The iPad is, you know, does more than just e-books. So, you know, there's an evolution going on.
Well, lots of callers to visit with you. We'll go to Andy in Cedarburg first here. Andy, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I've listened for a long time. This is the first time I've had the opportunity to call. Let me tell you what I have. I have maybe a six-year-old laptop. It has a XP operating system, personal, and I have plenty of unused memory, okay? So it's not a memory issue. The situation that happens with me is I might be connected to the internet, and I might have two or three tabs open. And specifically, one of them might be either a radio station or like a Pandora or even a YouTube. And if I decide that I want to navigate off of that particular screen to go to another, and I put it on pause, that means I stop the song or I stop the video or whatever it is, more often than not, somewhere down the road, my system will become bulky, and then what happens is the entire computer just shuts down.
Okay.
And it's almost always something to do with media. And I do my disk cleanup and defrag and Spybot and Adaware and Avira. I'm just figuring, have I done something wrong that way when I stop something in midstream that it's compromising my laptop?
Let me ask you some questions.
Sure.
You said six-year-old laptop, and you're using a version of XP.
Right.
How much memory do you have in your laptop?
150 gigabytes.
Gigabyte hard drive. Okay.
Right.
How much RAM do you have?
Geez, I don't know that.
Okay. Well,
how do I find that?
Yeah,
is it important enough?
It's important enough. The easy way is to right mouse click on My Computer.
Right.
And then if you look at properties,
right.
One of the tabs will tell you, you know, some basic information. It'll tell you what kind of processor you have, what version of XP you're running, uh-huh. and how much RAM you have in your computer.
Okay.
But if you have like 512 megabytes of RAM, XP works well works better with 1 gig of RAM. In a 6-year-old computer, you may have one stick of memory and it may be 256. You may have two sticks and it may be 512. You may be able to add another stick of memory to it to, you know, beef it up by 1 gigabyte. So to get more detailed information about your computer, there's a couple of applications out there that you can download to know more about what you can do.
Yeah.
One is called Belarc Advisor, BELARC.
Yeah, I've heard
Advisor.
Of that.
So you can do a Google search on that or whatever search engine, and you'll find it. There's another one called, I think it's spelled SPECCY. You could do a search on that, and that's another application that will give you, you know, system information. The other thing is, you know, in terms of free space on your computer,
right,
because with the internet connection you have, is that a broadband? Is
right.
it like a DSL or a cable where
yes.
it's high speed?
Cable, yeah.
Okay. One of the things is the free space that's on your computer, you may not actually have as much as you think to work with.
Uh-huh.
Have you ever resized your recycle bin on your computer?
I forget how to do that.
Okay.
Can you give me that too?
Yeah, if you right-mouse click on your recycle bin, click on Properties, by default it's 10% of your hard drive, so if you shrink that down to maybe 1%. If you use System Restore, you can click on Start, then Programs, then Accessories, then System Tools, then System Restore, and then go to System Restore Settings, and you can change that from a default of 12% to probably down to 1% as well.
Okay.
So that'll free up about 20% of what you think is free space, but the operating system's actually kind of put a little bubble around it. So that can, in a way, slow things down. But what's gone on in the 6 years since you got your laptop is the evolution of the internet technology in terms of what the servers are out there are doing and pushing to us, what we want to see, what the browsers have in terms of being able to do for our personal experience, and the hardware not, along with the OS, not really being able to keep up with it. And what Windows is known for, and not in a good way, is what's called memory leaks. And what happens with all this streaming media, in terms of what you're telling me you're doing and using for your personal experience, is that you're simply bumping up to the limitations of your hardware and your operating system and what's being pushed in your direction. And it's just at times throwing up its hands and saying, hey, you know, I'm going to struggle here. So you can look at increasing the RAM. That will probably help. But it's just the user experience that we're learning to expect and what they're pushing to us. And even the CPUs have evolved with, you know, the multimedia. I mean, Intel was saying, hey, you know, if you didn't have this chip, then what you're going to experience online is going to be different than what we're showing you on our ads, because you need this chip in order to experience it this way. So I'm just telling you that, you know, it's an evolution of the technology, and you're at a point where, okay, do I upgrade my hardware or do I look at another system? And, you know, you said 6 years. The government gives us 5 years to depreciate from a business standpoint. Realistically, you know, in 6 months, it's already changed and outdated. You know, 3 years, you start making decisions about do I add, what do I change? So
there you go.
Hopefully that helps.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we'll go right back to the phones as we talk with Peter Green about your personal computer. Braxton and Eau Claire, you're next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, I recently upgraded to Windows 7, and ever since then, it won't let me print anything. I have my computer hooked up wirelessly, and it shows the printer is there, and it will show the document pending, but it just won't print.
Have you, so you upgraded the system to Windows 7. Have you tried to reinstall the printer?
I did, actually. I put the CD in a couple times, and each time I put the CD, it says that it's like a unknown format or something like that now.
Have you tried for the, sometimes with the printers, if you go to the website,
yeah.
Have you gone to the printer manufacturer's website to see if there is an updated device driver?
Yeah, so, I looked, and they were talking about it. Really, what they said is I should reinstall Bonjour, and I've been trying to find it at the websites. It tells me to go, mm-hmm. and it says that I still have it, so I don't know. And then the other thing is it says that maybe it's my firewall, so I looked through that, but the firewall says that it's all allowing that stuff, so... Mm.
Have you tried turning off the firewall?
Yep. I tried turning it off for a while, and it's still just document pending.
Mm-hmm. So have you gone through where you've completely uninstalled the printer and then shut down the system and then tried to, you know, reinstall it from scratch as if you just purchased it?
I purchased it a while ago.
Right.
I haven't tried uninstalling everything and doing it again, no. I haven't gone with that.
Yeah, that's one of the routes that I would attempt to do is, you know, completely uninstall it. It could be something that through the upgrade process is basically, you know, got trashed and or over, you know, a file that it needed got overwritten. So
actually, that happened to a friend, and that worked.
Mm-hmm. But when you do that, you do the uninstall, you reboot your computer. I usually do it a couple of times. You know, I restart it, and then I restart it again, and then go through the installation. And I also try to download the latest version of what they offer off of the website versus what came with the computer, because that may be part of the issue. So... you know, maybe it's something
shot.
They identified, you know, as a fix.
Good luck. Thank you for calling. Brian in Chippewa Falls, on to you now. Hi, Brian.
Hello, Larry. Enjoy your programs.
Thank you.
Peter, I listen regularly, and I was prayed I'd never have to call.
Here you are.
Yes, here I am. I got a older laptop running XP Pro. You get my internet through Wi-Fi at the library.
Okay.
And
you're that close to the library that you...
Oh, no, I have to go actually to the library.
Okay.
Yep. So, which is a good experience.
Sure.
And have an email account through Gmail.
Yep.
And my homepage is Gmail. Right about the top of the year, the new year here, I can't do anything with Google anymore. It says, can't acquire the server... pipe broken. I'm afraid it's this Aurora. I tried downloading a new server or a new web browser, Foxfire.
Okay.
And it's doing the same thing. It just, I can't do anything with Google.
It sounds to me like you might have an exception in, so you can go to other websites.
Yeah, if I type it in the command line, and I can go to anywhere that's got nothing to do with Google.
Mm-hmm.
And then I, of course, needed email, so I started a quick Hotmail account.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had them access my email from Google.
Right.
And that came in fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I personally just can't do anything Google.
It sounds like you have an address listed as an exception in your firewall.
Okay.
Had you been using Windows Firewall?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Okay. If you go in there, I don't know exactly where it is, but one of the security settings is to prevent you from going to that address.
Okay. Okay.
So you, if you go into the Windows firewall and pry around, you should be able to find where there's a list of sites that
prohibited
inadvertently got added, that Google got added to that.
Okay.
And that should do it. That sounds exactly...
Because you're telling me it's across the board no matter what browser you're using, whether it's, you know, Google has its own browser called Chrome.
Right, I tried loading that one.
Yeah, see,
but of course it's associated with Google and
But the underlying thing is that the Windows firewall, or if you had another firewall and it was doing the same thing, is that it's through the operating system saying don't go to this site, no matter who you're using, whether or not you're using Chrome or Internet Explorer or Firefox.
Okay,
and that's why I tell people, you know, that get new systems, and it's one of the first things that I do. You're typically going to have Safari, you know, from Apple. You're going to have Internet Explorer on a Windows system. Get another web browser so you can test, you know, what the issue is, if it's, you know, with one web browser, is it going on with two?
So, right.
All right.
Now, what's that called? Now, in firewall exceptions list, or
right? You're gonna there's a way. See,
I'll just sniff around in there.
Well, this is for other people as well. One of the things that you can control from a parent standpoint is if you don't want people, you know, you have a family computer and you don't want people going or having certain sites being seen on that computer, is to go in and add to that list, so that you're restricting access to it. So as a system administrator on a computer, you can prevent people from using the computer, you know, in certain ways. So
do you know what the name of that list is? What I search for when I find it?
It's probably an exception list.
I think it's an exception list.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I disabled the firewall and still had the problem.
Disabled the firewall, still had the problem.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you reboot the system and then?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've been doing a lot of rebooting, a lot of restores from older, you know, system restores.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing's bringing me around. But I will check this list out again.
Try that at least and see what happens.
I will.
Yeah. All right. You know, sometimes when you turn things off, you're accepting at face value that the computer actually listened to what you wanted. And I've had certain things that I've done with Windows where I say, hey, turn this off, and it still sits there and it's on.
Okay.
And I'm like, how do I get this to go away? So there may be some other research that you may have to do. And what I would recommend doing is if you go to, you can't really search with Google,
right.
But if you go to my webpage,
okay.
If you go to infostar.com,
yep, in there,
and you go to the Virus Info Center, which is listed on the left, and at the very top part of that page, I have listed forums.
Yes.
And there's a wide variety of tech support forums. Including Microsoft even has a knowledge base that you can access up there. And so you can go in and ask questions or type in questions or queries in the different forums, and you'll be searching, you know, not through the entire web, but areas that offer that kind of help.
Tech support forums.
Yeah. So there's a whole list of them there.
Peter, thank you very much.
Yep. Good
Thanks
luck.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's take some more calls. Paul in Milwaukee. Hello to you.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
Hi.
I have a Dell Dimension 4600 desktop running Windows XP. It's about 6 years old. And a week or so ago, the power source failed. So I installed a new power source, and it worked fine for a day. Now, when I turn it on, I get a solid amber light on the front of the case. It looks like it doesn't even go into BIOS, and the monitor is blank, and I'm tearing my hair out.
Hmm. It sounds like definitely a short. I know that can be frustrating. Have you tried to, you know, with it unplugged, redo all the connections?
Yes. Yes, I have.
Okay. And you still get the same result.
Mm-hmm. If it's worth anything, the original power source was 300 watts. The people I bought the new one from suggested and sold me one that was 450.
Yeah, that's, well, what it does there is you use more energy. You know, in terms of powering up the system, it didn't need more.
Mm-hmm.
It is, I mean, I've replaced bad power supplies with power supplies that went bad quickly. It can be frustrating because what that's telling me is that, number one, there's either a short that was going on with a bad component that was, it had flaked out and for whatever reason blew the power supply, but now the component has gone flaky. So that could either be a bad video card or it could be the power supply again. So what I would do is, you know, take the power supply back and get it replaced and try and see if it just happens to be the power supply that's the problem.
Okay, because I am getting power. It just doesn't do anything.
Right. The fan's on the power supply? Everything's running?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Do you have, like, component video cards and sound cards and things like that?
I have a video card.
Yeah. What you could try doing is with, you know, it unplugged, is removing some of the, you know, components and seeing if something is suspect that way. It could be something like unplugging the hard drive and trying to power it on and see if, you know, you can get access to the BIOS. Or, you know, if you unplug the video card, you won't see anything on the screen, but it may sound like there's more life in the computer than just, you know, the amber light and that's it. So it can be frustrating troubleshooting those things because you don't really have a lot of parts to, you know, interchange or replace while you're trying to test it. So
give it a try. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Good luck. I know it could be really frustrating because you need extra parts and you don't really have them. And then to go through the expense of getting them and the time, it's almost like working on a plumbing project.
Let's go to Ben in Duluth. I know all about those. Ben, hi.
Hi. I have a desktop with Windows Vista and, it's a couple years old, plenty of memory. It's just kind of it's more an operating system question than anything. I can't access files on this computer. As far as like system files, it tells me that access is denied.
Okay.
And I kind of grew up on Windows 95, 98, mm-hmm. XP,
sure.
And I'm used to having total authority over every file on my computer. It's kind of annoying. I was just wondering if there's any way I can shut down those access blocks.
Well, what you can do is when you log in as if you're the only user, or if you log in as the administrator,
yep.
And you go to Windows Explorer, and then look under File Types. You can change what's going on is Vista and Windows 7 and even XP. They try to prevent the user from really making changes unless they really know what they're doing.
Right.
And Microsoft's got a white paper or a tech paper on this, and you can search it on their site as well. It gives you more detail. But basically what they're doing is they're not showing you and giving you access to hidden system files.
Right.
So you can there's a little circle that you have to, you know, check or uncheck that will allow you to view system hidden files in certain folders. Or sometimes you can see things, but you can't really touch it.
Mm-hmm.
You know how they say things are grayed out, where you actually can see it's there, but you can't do anything to it because the OS, the operating system's not allowing you to. And in this case, you're going through the Windows Explorer file management system and saying, hey, I'm the administrator, and I want access to this, and I want to work on them. So,
well, where can I find that icon and the Explorer icon? And
this is the other thing. One of the things that I do when I set up computers, I put Windows Explorer right on the desktop. Okay. Because I like to have it there, and I think it's an important thing that people should know how to manage files on their system, because when they download or they load pictures up on their computer, you know, you need to find things, you need to move things, you need to delete things, you need to manage your system, and it's not there. But they'd rather give you access to an online service or, you know, try to sell you something when you get a new computer. So anyhow, if you click on Programs, go to Accessories, you'll find Windows Explorer listed there. What I do is I right-mouse click on it, and you can create a shortcut, or you can drag it to your desktop and say create a shortcut.
Excellent. So, I will do that. One more quick question. I heard the guy talking about the power supply earlier.
Yeah.
I've had two computers fry on me because of bad power supplies. Mm-hmm. What is a good recommendation for purchasing a new one, before the old one goes out on you and fries the hard drive?
You've got to know the connections that you have. There's a variety of power supplies out there, and, you know, the system board or motherboard connections that they have. So, you know, what you're asking is you basically need to know how to open up your computer, take a look in there, and, almost like diagram, you know, what connections you have to what devices and what it looks like, and then you can go to a store or even online and look at pictures and as well as go to the manufacturer's page, and, you know, they'll have details as well. The thing is, with the manufacturer's page, they'll have their model, but I would look for a compatible one, because you usually will save a lot of money. Some of those power supplies can get pretty pricey.
All right. Well, thank you very much, guys.
Thanks for calling. Appreciate it, Ben. And Peg in Rice Lake. On to you. Hi, Peg.
I lost the icon for my E drive.
Okay.
Icon for your E drive.
Okay. I try to access my E drive, and I get a message. It's got five lines. Should I read it?
Sure.
E:/refers to a location that is unavailable. Could be on a hard drive, on this computer, or on a network. I don't have a network.
Okay.
Check to make sure that the disk is properly inserted. I've tried many times.
Okay.
Or that you are connected to the internet. That shouldn't matter. Or your network. That doesn't matter. And then try again. If it still cannot be located, the information might have been moved to a different location. So I went into my computer folder, the main folder that holds all the drives.
Right.
And there's an A, there's a D, all the other stuff that should be there, but no E.
Okay. Now, do you use, did you hook up anything like a camera or a little memory stick? Or?
I got a plug-in camera.
Yeah, it could be that when you hook that up and you told it to remember, somehow you told it to remember that location, and the computer's referencing it as an E drive, but it's
I didn't tell the camera to do anything. When
okay.
when it comes up, it just, well, wait a minute, it'll pop into the computer file, it'll pop in an icon that says something. I forget what.
Mm-hmm. But what you're trying to do is hook up to a drive that, to me, typically E is not a permanent drive on a computer. It's a temporary.
Yeah.
So what's happened is that's been removed from your computer. Whether it was a memory stick or the camera's memory, and it's no longer attached, but it was there at one time, and it was told inadvertently to remember that location, but yet it's not there, and you're clicking on a reference to it, but it doesn't exist because it can't read anything. So it's not something I would be concerned with. Because if your computer comes up and you're actually able to use it, then more than likely you're reading the information off of your main drive, which is called the C drive.
What do you mean I'm actually able to use what?
Are you using your computer?
Yep, right now, yeah.
Right. So you're operating it off of the main drive, which is called the C drive.
Okay, that's right.
Yeah.
And the E drive is gone.
More than likely, the E drive in your computer was a temporary drive, and that reference to it is there, but it's no longer hooked up to it.
What do I do now?
I wouldn't be concerned with it.
I run CDs. That's where my E drive. That's what my E drive has.
The E drive was your CD drive.
That's right.
So when you plug in your, if you plug in a disc into that CD, then you should be able to access it.
If I plug in a disc to that E drive,
right,
or what I thought was,
yeah,
it comes up with, it isn't there.
Yeah.
In the computer folder, it's missing. And if when I put go under run on the main start menu,
mm-hmm,
and put capital E colon backslash and then okay, it brings up the message that I read to you. It may be moved to a different location. Now my cat is on the keyboard.
Okay, if your E drive is your CD or DVD drive, number one, you have to have a disc in there. And number two, you have to have a purpose for what you're doing with that disc. If it's a program disk, it'll have auto run and it will pop up on the screen if it's reading it correctly. If there are pictures that happen to be on that CD or DVD, it might ask you to open up those files through Windows to look with the picture manager or so forth. But if you put a blank disk in it, and there's nothing to read, it's going to still react the same. It may come up and say, what do you want to do with this disk? But if there's an installation problem where the drive is actually having a problem working, you should be getting, you know, abort retry errors, or you may have to have somebody, you know, or you could try to, you know, reinstall that drive. So there's got to be a purpose behind when you're trying to access that disk. There's something has to be in it, and you have to try to do something with it.
Okay, I am. I got a disk in there.
All right.
And I got it on run, and I put E drive. I mean, what I told you, capital E, colon, backslash, and then okay, and it brings up the message I read you.
Yeah, but when you're trying to... When you say you're trying to run something, that doesn't sound to me like the right way to be doing that, unless there's written instructions and you're not quite putting that in correctly. What you want to do, do you know which version of Windows you're using?
XP.
Okay, if you click on Start and then click on Run and then Browse and then look... one of the lines allows you to go on your computer and go to that E drive, then it will whirl in your CD, and then it will bring up on your screen application files that it will allow you to pick or choose from if there are programs or applications on that disk. If not, you're going to have to change the file type from applications to any file on that disk, so that you can look and browse off of that CD. So it's not as simple as it sounds.
Okay, I did browse.
Okay.
I got a bunch of icons off my desktop. Do I want to punch computer now?
No, you want to browse off of the disk that's in your E drive.
I can't access it. It says I haven't got an E drive. It says...
No drive.
Yeah. So, well, then I think you need to have somebody take a look at it and have it reinstalled.
Yeah. It's one I don't think we can handle over the air.
Yep.
Other than to say, take it in and have somebody take a look at it, or have somebody come to your home and take a look at it. Good luck. I'm sorry we couldn't be more help on that, Peg. Appreciate your call. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening in here on the Ideas Net as we talk personal computers with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison. Glad to have him along, and thank you for listening in. Tammy in Hartford says, so it's going back to that lost CD drive. She lost one and caused her to take the computer to Best Buy, and they reset something in the operating system, and that solved the problem. The Geek Squad guy says this happens with Vista sometimes. So there we've got that report. Let's go to an email, which we haven't done here. Great working version of Windows XP. I have a golden backup of Windows XP, so if I get a virus, I can restore back to my golden backup of XP. What I'd like to do now to know is the most important thing that Windows 7 can do that XP can't, or what does 7 offer that I don't have that would make it worth the risk work of moving XP to Windows 7?
Well, you know, I always throw out the need, you know, when you look at what you're using the computer for, and then so what are your goals, needs, and objectives, and then finding the software and then the hardware. So if things are working well for what you do, and, you know, for most of us, it's accessing the internet and email and browsing and our online experience, and then documents, maybe a spreadsheet, maybe some accounting, maybe some graphics work, working with pictures, and some other hobby things. So, you know, if your computer is working fine and you're happy with it, why change?
Why change, yeah.
But, you know, in terms of the user experience in the last couple of years with people purchasing new computers and them choosing to go with Vista, you know, there was a problem with Vista, and, you know, 7 fixed that. So
if you want to be completely safe, you could probably at least wait until a service pack comes out for Windows 7.
That would probably be a good thing.
Before you went to install it, wait till you see the service pack.
See, now that this person refers to their golden copy of XP, you can maybe a lot of people out there don't know this, but there is an XP Service Pack 3 release. I believe it's like 340 meg download, so it's about three quarters of a CD equivalent. Is when you install that, so if you were to reinstall XP and then you install that, it basically makes your system as current as it can be, excluding some updates to like Internet Explorer 8 and some other, you know, small things. So that's what I would do. So if I was going to do a reinstall of XP, I would make sure I had that XP Service Pack 3 file, because that might take almost as long as the initial reinstall of XP.
Glendalyn received an email supposedly from my friend, which had the subject "Dear Friend." The email address was exactly hers, but when I opened it, I found it was from a Chinese company, ECL Electronics. I didn't click on their link, but I went to Google and looked them up. Others had questions about them also. Do you think they could have infected my computer? I didn't click their link, but how can they use an email address that's not theirs? And now I wonder if it's safe to go back and look at my bank statements, for example.
There's a number of things going on there. One is people can camouflage email. People can also camouflage websites. So that's not something that's new. You know, and the other thing is, you know, in terms of your system being safe, you know, it's not a bad thing to clean out, you know, the cookies on your system, the stuff that when you're constantly revisiting financial websites and so forth. There are on occasion websites that are able to exploit some security holes or flaws in the Windows OS. And Windows Microsoft tries to plug those up as quickly as possible. That's why, you know, adhering to doing their updates. If you go to windowsupdate.microsoft.com, that's where that, you know, their system will interact with yours and, you know, provide your system with the updates to any of those security flaws or holes. And that's one of the nice things about the XP operating system is a lot of those exploits have basically been shored up. That's why it's been so popular, and that's why Microsoft was basically lobbied to, you know, keep it available and and support it. I don't know about Windows 7 and Vista. You know, there are probably, you know, people lurking out there, and, you know, you have to be cautious. So, you know, just be careful with, you know, in terms of financial information and what you're archiving on your system. You know, to me, if there were more penalties and stiffer fines and some kind of, you know, whether it's a government entity, to really try to combat this stuff, the rewards are so great for these people for what they try to do to us to, you know, fish and monetary gains, and it crosses all borders. And yet, who's doing something about it?
Yeah, it needs to be a global kind of thing.
Yeah. So,
all governments need to be working on in concert.
So, you know, it's just, you know, just safeguard your information.
Kim in Kewaskum, on to you. Hi, Kim.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hi.
I'm using Office 2010 Beta.
Okay.
And when I download or when I get my messages, they are not taken off the server, and I don't know where to go to tell it to do that. Because my laptop, I have 2007 on that one, and I'm getting several hundred messages that I've already read on my desktop. Where do I go to work on that?
So you're talking about your email Outlook?
Yes, sir. Outlook, yeah, Microsoft Outlook.
Yeah, there should be a setting in Outlook that tells you to, you know, remove or delete the messages once they've been downloaded from your server, unless you haven't done a complete download or interrupted it. Then they would stay up there until, you know, you actually did a complete, you know, checking and downloading, send, receive of the messages. As long as that's checked off, it should delete those messages.
I agree.
If it's not doing it in 2010 beta, then that's some kind of issue it's having interacting with your system. If it's going on with 2007 Outlook, it almost sounds, I don't know if the two of them can coexist. It sounds like you can't have a 2007 Outlook and a 2010 Outlook.
That's true. I have the 2007 on my laptop and the 2010 on my desktop.
Yeah.
And heretofore in the different versions, I never had to do any checks or unchecks to have them get rid of them on the server.
Maybe they change the default setting.
Yeah, it appears that way.
Yeah.
I'll have to search for that.
Well, if you go under probably look for options and preferences, you'll find it in one of the tabs.
I would imagine also options and preferences, I would find out when I exit the program, it will delete all the files in the delete folder.
Right. Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Have a good day, gentlemen.
All right, yep, thank you for calling. Steve emailed us, every evening at 8 p.m., my computer slows down greatly. I know something must be running in the background, but Control-Alt-Delete doesn't show me what's running. I've also checked my schedule tasks, and nothing appears there that should be running at that time. Any thoughts on that?
There might be an antivirus program. I know he said that, you know, Control-Alt-Delete doesn't really show him anything. If it slows down at the same time every
night. 8 p.m. every night.
Yeah, it sounds like there's something that's just, you know, that's running. And, you know, you could have programs like MS Defender that is scheduled to run at a certain time. These things glow. Not that they glow, but you can almost see them like a little heartbeat in the lower right system tray. I would check and see if you have anything in the right system tray, any of the icons, and you can right mouse click and look at the properties, or you can exit out of them and see if some of the things, you know, if it goes away, you know, close it or exit it, or click on them, open them up, and check the settings on them and see if one of those might happen to be running in the background.
Yeah, that makes sense. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. He'll be with us right up until 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. Pete, this time of the program, we usually go to your top 10 list, places to go on the internet.
Yep. All right, so if you go to InfoStar.com and click on Current Top 10 or the Top 10 Archives, they're all there. Just scroll down to today's date. The first one is called FindSolar.com, and it's a resource to help you find solar professionals and solutions. And they've got a calculator up there for helping you understand, you know, how solar heat or photovoltaic works in your favor, possibly. The next one is a website put up by the Air Conditioning, Heating, and Refrigeration Institute, and it's a trade association representing manufacturers of air conditioning, heating, and commercial refrigeration equipment. And there's over 300 member companies, and it's called AHRINET.org. So, and got a lot of useful information up there for you know, those kind of products. Next one is called FineHomeBuilding.com, and it's got a lot of useful information about residential home building and remodeling. And we will have spring and summer at some point in time, so you might find some good stuff there. This the fourth site is called Attributor. It's ATTRIBUTOR.com. And it's for protecting your revenue by eliminating unauthorized content use. So this is for book publishers, authors, newspapers, test writers for schools. And they have a product that continually monitors the web for abuse of unauthorized content use. So I don't know if they have anything out there for musicians and videos, but... this next one is called Mice, MYCE.com, and it's in beta, and it's a technology web resource with over 450,000 community members, provides news, info, help, and more. Number six is called Vudu, VUDU.com, and it's an online service that provides access to thousands of movies and TV shows directly through the TV without requiring a computer or cable satellite TV service. So I haven't tried it, but that's their website. And I've got links to others you can check out as well. Number seven, I have personally experienced this, and I must say what they have works. And it's an alternative to Apple's iPhone application store, which they don't like, but it's there. And it's called rockyourphone.com, and its focus is on delivering third-party mobile software to smartphones. So it's not just iPhone, but it's other smartphones, but they have the first and only independent iPhone application store. Number eight is fairspotter.net. I don't know if it's been mentioned on your show, but it's another resource to try and check for inexpensive travel, and I put links up there to other places. Number nine is called Wi-Fi-Forum.com. It's an online community of Wi-Fi enthusiasts around the world and dedicated to helping each other, technical, non-technical, to make Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, and other technologies work. And number 10 is called Yedda, Y-E-D-D-A.com. And it's a resource to help you find answers to questions you may have with people sharing knowledge and information. And it's just something to check out.
And all those are up on your InfoStar.com.
All there.
All right. Let's go to Rose in Blanchardville. Rose, hello. Thank you for waiting.
Hi. I have a new computer. It's Vista. and what I had before was Windows 98. I put everything on disk when I had Windows 98, so nothing actually was in the hard drive. So when I got the new computer, it had to have all of my files, which were 17 disks, put into Vista.
Okay.
And that happened. And it was doing fine until I needed labels for Christmas. I brought up my label file, and it didn't come in labels. It all came to the left side, one after another, all the names and addresses, one after another. And I couldn't in any way get it to do labels, which is what the format was to begin with. So I did call some smart people here in Blanchardville, and they came in and worked on it for different times and couldn't do it. So, but if I go into, say, Microsoft Works, which is part of a program that's in my Vista, I'm able to go into labels and do a label and get out of it, come back into it, and it is a label. So it's just not picking up the one from my disk, which I don't understand. How could I get those to come in?
It sounds like you need to import the data that's in your, you know, that you're trying to generate the labels for, and you're using an old. I'm kind of surprised that when you went to work on that file in your new system, that it didn't ask to be imported or converted.
It was all put into my computer. I had someone do that at the computer store.
Right.
And he also put documents what they call a flash stick.
Right.
So in case I lose something, you know, I could always go back and get that.
Correct.
But I any which way, I can't seem to pick it up as labels.
It sounds so. You have the data.
Yeah,
formatted
just not in a label form.
In a form that used to work for labels, but now it's not working for your new computer with new software to generate the labels.
That's correct.
And it sounds to me like there needs to be a conversion process where you actually would export out of the old program the data and then import into the new program the data and then reformat it using the new software so that you can generate labels.
So how do I...
That makes sense.
With Works, if you're using Works before, it's stored in a data format, and I don't know if you're using...
I wasn't using Works before. I was using Corel.
Corel. Yeah, you might have compatibility issues, and what you need to do... What you can almost do is cut and paste your data. If you can still open up that file to get access to the label information, and then just highlight it and copy it out and then put it into Works and then, you know, format it within that software, you could probably get it to work. But it sounds like a compatibility issue of the data format.
Yeah.
So copy and paste.
I wish I could help you more about that, but converting from old systems to new systems, if you have access to the raw data, in other words, the actual records, you can typically export those records out into what's called a comma-delimited file or a tab-delimited file, and then almost pull or import that raw data into a new program so that you can then use it and format it however you want.
Okay. Good luck. Give it a shot. See what you can do there,
you know,
Rose.
Just to give people an understanding, when you're converting like from one email system or upgrading to a new email system and you have all your contacts or your addresses, typically you can export those out to a file and save them, and you can import them into a smartphone or you can import them into, you know, another device.
Peggy emailed us with a quick note here. I had the same problem of an earlier caller who thought He had a bad power supply with a blank screen and amber light. For my Mac desktop, all I had to do was, she had the same thing. She reset the PMU, and that solved it, but it took days of research to find the hint. She said online on a message board somewhere. That was last April and still working fine. The computer's about at least 7 years old.
He actually doesn't have access to anything with the BIOS or resetting anything. So,
oh.
You know, he had a blank screen. The light just is on.
Wow.
So it's hard to reset something when you can't.
Light's on, but nobody's there.
Yeah.
Okay. I feel that way myself about myself a lot of times. Deb in Milwaukee, let's go to you now. Hi, Deb.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Peter.
Hi.
The show is really timely for the problem I have. I had told your caller I had a problem with Adobe Reader.
Mm-hmm.
But while I've been on hold, I realized that it probably has stems from this other issue, that when I power on my computer, that I have a bunch of screens that pop up right away, and the first one says Windows sidebar settings.ini is being used by another process. Close the other program and then click retry. Or click cancel to exit sidebar. So, you know, I close that out, and then the next screen says Microsoft Visual C++ Runtime Library Runtime Error. This application has requested the runtime to terminate it in an unusual way. Please contact the application support team for more information. So I just click OK. Then another screen is on here, Snapfish Media Detector has stopped working. And I don't think that matters to me, so I close that.
Mm-hmm.
And then Microsoft Works window cannot open, so I don't think that matters either, so I close that. And Works cannot complete the task because there is not enough memory on your computer, and that doesn't make sense, so I close that. And last, I have the same screen, runtime error, Microsoft C++ runtime library. This application has requested runtime to terminate in an unusual way. So what I had done prior was I just closed everything out so I could access my email. And okay, now getting to my Adobe Reader problem, if any of those others aren't a bigger issue.
Okay.
So,
Peter, were you going to say something?
Well, I was going to – are all those messages coming up when you turn on your computer?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
So I was thinking they possibly were from the last session that didn't go so well. I tried to move some files from a flash drive from one computer to another.
Okay.
In order to print something out, and it kept screaming at me. It didn't want to work, I finally got it to print out.
Okay.
And I thought that those other messages were from that session.
Okay.
But my issue, it seems that my computer isn't running properly. I'm having email issues, but I can receive and send email. It's just very slow, and it doesn't want to send.
Okay. And what's going on with your Adobe Reader?
With Adobe, when I went on IRS website to download a form,
mm-hmm.
and when I click to download, Adobe comes up as an error. And I'm just getting right back in that, and I can read to you what the error says. One second. I was on the phone with Adobe Tech Support, and, okay, internal error occurred.
Okay. Well, how old's your computer?
Two years old.
Which OS are you using?
Vista.
Okay. Okay. One thing that's going on with all those messages that are popping up is that you have programs that are running in the background that have incorrect references and are generating all these error messages. So it's almost like the operating system's running around trying to figure out how to do what it's being told to do, and it doesn't know where to go or where to find things because the links to it, the instructions, are not valid. So it's giving you all these error messages, and because of that, it's using all these resources to try and give you this kind of feedback, which is not being it's not helping you because you're not able to do things that you want to. It sounds to me that if you're capable, what I would do is do some research online to actually do some repair work to the Vista operating system. And that would require you to have your Vista, CD or DVD available, and there are instructions for doing that online. The other thing is to go in and turn off some of the calls that it's making to these programs. And
how do I do that?
If you click on the Vista button, and then where you can do a search, you should be able to type in MSCONFIG, and in the startup there would be references to different programs to start up. What you need to do is make note of all the ones that are checked off, and then uncheck them, and then save and restart your computer. And the ones that are missing, if the error messages go away, but there are certain things that you still want running, you're going to have to, go back and
turn them on one at a time.
Turn them on one at a time. But some of those messages that I'm hearing are telling me that they're not typical error messages, and that something was moved inadvertently, maybe through file management, maybe by accident, where these files moved and the references no longer exist. But having a C++ runtime error is a high-level language. It's not like a call to an antivirus program or some simple web browser program. To me, web browser is simple versus a C++ issue. So, and then the Adobe Reader could very well be related to some of those other error messages. So it's not something that, to me, is an easy fix. You need to have somebody look under the hood on your system, because some of those error messages are not typical.
Not typical.
So
there you have it. Thank you, Deb, for calling.
I wish it was easier than that, but those are not normal error messages on a computer system.
Dan has a PC infected with a virus that overrides his Google search and sends him to Nexplore and other web pages. Avast didn't catch it. Mm-hmm. Bought Bitdefender and with no help. What do you do there?
If you have a system that has a heavy infestation, in other words, it's a deep infestation, you almost have to take that drive out of that computer and put it on another drive, so it's a secondary drive to another system that has updated software, antivirus software, to scan it. And then you may have to scan it multiple times to actually remove the infestation.
Boy.
So I've dealt with that, and you try to scan it as a network drive, and it excludes the portions that need to be scanned because the infestation is, in a sense, smart and says, hey, I know I'm being scanned. But removing it physically from that from that computer and attaching it usually works.
Wayne in River Falls, on to you. Hi, Wayne.
Hi.
What's your question?
Oh, I've got hundreds of them, but my least complicated one is I bought a new laptop here. Well, actually, I bought it for my wife for Christmas. and it has a temporary antivirus in it now, McAfee, and it expires tomorrow. What is your recommendations for antivirus? I think I talked to everybody, and everybody has a different opinion.
Yeah, there are a number of them out there. One that I've I've been told about it for quite a while, but kind of ignored it in a sense because I was angry at Microsoft for their approach to it, where they were charging, and now they're providing it for free. It's called Microsoft Security Essentials, and if you type that in your search engine, so Microsoft Security Essentials, there's a download site to it, and it works well. It's easy to use. It's got a nice interface to it. It's free. It's something they used to charge for. So it'll scan for antivirus, malware, spyware, and so forth. And it puts a little green folder with a check mark in your system tray to let you know that it's actually working. And you can schedule updates or schedule it to run after you've set it up and updated it to run daily or run whenever you want.
Whenever you want.
And so I would take a look at that. There are others, ClamWin, AVG, Avast, Bitdefender have free versions. you can try running two of them, but I wouldn't be paying for, and I never have paid for antivirus. I use those programs.
Thanks for calling. And Tom would like to speed up his Windows XP computer. He knows he needs to disengage the icons on the right taskbar. Is there a pathway to resolve this on your website?
Actually, if you go to my tips page and if you look for Windows Startup, I've got links there that give you lots of detail on how to do that. One of them is basically you click on Start, go to Run in XP, MS Config, and then look for the Startup tab. And what those links in my tips page give you more detailed information about what's going on in that startup folder.
Okay.
And there are even databases out there that you can search on to help you define what some of those things mean. And some of those databases have lots of entries.
Well, here you are on Groundhog Day, Pete. And next time you're on for the Ides of March, I believe, March 1st.
Yeah, that's a first. In all the years we've been doing it, I don't think it's ever fallen this way.
Well, it's always a pleasure. Sorry, we had piles of emails. I'm just sorry we couldn't get to everybody, but that's the way it works.
Thanks, Larry.
Yeah, thank you, Pete. He'll be back March 1st. We'll do this again. Just to take a look ahead at what's coming up tomorrow, Joan Hall will be with us. I'm looking forward to seeing her. She's the senior editor of the Dictionary of American Regional English, and whenever she comes by, we always have a lot of fun with those quirky words and phrases. We always get some great ones. So that's at 11. 11:45, you're looking for bargain airfares. Rick Seney of faircompare.com joins us. Thanks for listening. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.